This week, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is on a historic tour of Africa, visiting Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia. Her trip follows the Ugandan Parliament's passage of the so-called Anti-Homosexuality Act that would make some crimes punishable by death if President Yoweri Museveni signs the bill into law. How will this affect Kampala's relationship with Washington? And how should the United States approach LGBTQ plus rights in Africa as it seeks to boost its ties with the continent? We'll have in-depth reporting and analysis for you. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there, I'm Heidi Adams, coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. And we begin with U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris, who is on her first visit to the African continent. Her trip to Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia is part of the White House's efforts to boost ties with Africa. Well, joining me here in studio is Kenneth Mwenda. He's a professor of law at South Africa's University of the Western Cape. Prof, warm welcome to you. Thank you. So great to have you back here on Straight Talk Africa. I want to get right into it. Vice President Harris is the most senior member of the Biden administration to visit Africa. It's her first trip to the continent. She's already pledged $100 million in assistance to the region. What, Prof, is the significance of her visit and why these three nations?
Thanks for that, Heidi. There are four fundamental issues, I think, that are part of the agenda for the visit. Number one is to promote investment, FDI from U.S. private companies. Secondly, also is the issue of empowerment of women, young girls, and young entrepreneurs. Then the third item on the agenda that she's likely to focus on is issue of governance and democracy. And then there's the issue of the digital economy. So those are the four sort of building blocks behind the visit to Africa for the three countries.
And Prof, what's the state of the relationship right now between these three countries, Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia, and the United States, especially in the cases of Tanzania and Zambia? What's the relationship now as opposed to what it was like in previous dispensations?
I'd like to see this from a historical perspective. I think of Kwame Nkrumah, I think of Julius Nyerere, I think of Kenneth Kaunda. The institutions that they left behind have seen these countries emerge as stable democracies. Okay, so that's very critical. There's a historical context to that. So I see the discussion as a continuation of Nkrumah, Nyerere, and Kaunda at the the discussion table. Now, beyond that, if you look at the issue of the Road and Belt Initiative of China, infrastructure development. These three countries are actually being courted by China as some of the countries that will benefit from the Road and Belt Initiative. So there are some strategic issues. But of course, it's not a competition between China and the U.S. It's not a competition. It's simply to think of other possible avenues for these African countries to find support for whatever they are doing in terms of development.
Well, democracy and human rights already seem to be big themes right on this trip. And speaking of democracy, the Third Summit for Democracy kicks off this week. Of course, it's co-hosted by five countries, among them the United States and Zambia. Right. But something caught my attention, this week, Prof. The Washington Post published an analysis piece by Zambia's President Hakainde Hichilema entitled, "You Cannot Eat Democracy." And in it, the president says, "I know the rough edges of an imperfect democracy." He talks about how his own human rights were once violated when he was in opposition politics, of course. But he makes quite a few interesting statements. He says human rights sustain the spirit, but not the body. And he talks about the country's economic struggles. And he says questions like, "What has democracy done for me?" Can be dangerous prologues to democratic unraveling. Is President Hichilema here expressing fear or concern that democracy does not seem to be delivering or have delivered demonstrable economic benefits for African countries?
I think the president makes a good point, actually. From my understanding, what he's trying to say is that there is this issue of political democracy on the one hand, and there is this issue of economic democracy, free market economy, private property rights, and so forth. I think that dichotomy, meaning to say, you know, we need to work on things like accountability to grow the economy. We need support of the donor community to help us move forward, as opposed to just talking about democracy. Really, that's the underlying thrust from the way I see it. So, you know, it's a situation of, you know, you can't have human rights in an economy which is not actually thriving. The economy has an impact on the realization of human rights. So that's where he's coming from.
And so not just what has democracy done for me, but what has democracy done for me lately? Professor, I would like you to stay with us, please, because one of the challenges for the U.S. vice president, of course, is the issue of LGBTQ plus rights. And that is our focus today. How should the U.S. approach gay rights in Africa? Will we see more countries on the continent move to protect or crack down on sexual minorities? Now, Uganda made global headlines recently after its parliament passed the country's Anti-Homosexuality Act, which makes it a crime to identify as gay. It now sits on the desk of President Yoweri Museveni, and we'll have more on that in a moment, but I want you to first take a look at this. This is a view of the status of LGBTQ plus rights around the world. And now, the countries in dark and light blue are those that protect same-sex relations, and the countries in orange and red represent those that are cracking down on sexual minorities. And, of course, Human Rights Watch says of the 69 countries in the world that criminalize same-sex relations, Africa, more than 30 of them are in Africa. And in recent years, Mozambique, Botswana, and Angola have overturned colonial-era laws criminalizing same-sex relations. South Africa, of course, remains the exception. That nation protects gay rights and same-sex marriage. It has some of the most progressive LGBTQ plus rights in the world. Well, in contrast, Uganda's anti-homosexuality bill is one of the harshest pieces of legislation of its kind in the world. VOA's Ignatius Anor has been covering the story and joins me now. Hello there, Ignatius.
Hi, Haiti. How do you do?
Fine, thank you.
Right. So, panic, fear, horror, and disbelief. That's how many LGBTQ plus persons in Uganda are feeling following passage of anti-homosexuality legislation by the country's parliament. However, some conservatives are welcoming the news. In this report, I examine what is fueling rising anti-gay sentiment on the continent. Analysts say religion and cultural values form the heart of anti-gay rhetoric across most parts of Africa. This belief is leading to attempts by African politicians to enact laws intended to punish LGBTQ plus community, also known as sexual minorities. Uganda's controversial bill, formerly known as the Anti-Homosexuality Act, slaps a life sentence on anyone who identifies as gay.
And that this bill, right on speaker, recognizes that same-sex attraction is not innate and immutable characteristic. It was also intended to protect our cherished culture, the legal, religious, and traditional family values of Ugandans, and acts that are likely to promote sexual promiscuity in this country.
President Yoweri Museveni has not yet signed the legislation into law, but it is alarming rights activists who worry about its implications on a group already facing discrimination in Uganda and the continent at large.
Sort of endorses homophobia in the public's eye, because parliament has basically made legislated homophobia. And so that means that people will feel justified in discriminating against people because of what they think their sexual identity is. May or may not be true. They can deny them housing, they can deny them jobs, they can beat them, they can assault them, and feel justified in doing that because the law says essentially that gay people shouldn't exist in Uganda. And we saw this happening 10 years ago when the first iteration of the Anti-Homosexuality Act was passed.
Almost 70 countries worldwide criminalize same-sex relationships. Of these, 32 are in Africa, including Nigeria, Ethiopia, Egypt, and Zimbabwe. Activists blame colonial laws passed down by colonizers for such legislation that continue to be on the books even decades after the end of colonization. Njeri Gitaru, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission in Kenya, says the implications of Uganda's bill are dire.
And also seeing them actually pass the bill has had a direct effect on the lives of queer people in Uganda. In the last months, seen the increased number of attacks against LGBTQ people in Uganda and in Kenya and in surrounding countries. And what this does is collapse any barrier of protection that queer people might have.
Only South Africa in 2006 has legalized same-sex marriage on the continent. In recent times, Angola, Botswana, Mozambique, Lesotho and the Seychelles Republic have also passed laws to decriminalize homosexuality.
There is hope for LGBTQ persons all over Africa in that we are becoming more aware as people. We're becoming more aware of the spin, of the twisting of narratives, and people are beginning to question it.
The United Nations, the European Union, and right groups are calling on Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni to veto the bill. Meanwhile, the U.S. is not ruling out sanctions against Uganda. John Kirby, the U.S. National Security Council spokesman, says if the bill is signed into law, it could force the U.S. into repercussions that may be in an economic way. I am Ignatius Anno. Haiti, back to you now.
Ignatius, thank you very much. And just to note, we did reach out to the Foreign Affairs Department, Uganda's Foreign Affairs Department. We did not hear back. We wanted to ask the minister, of course, about the international implications of this, but we received no response. But how much of a diplomatic tightrope will the issue of LGBTQ plus rights in Africa be for the White House? And we'll discuss that issue after the break. Plus, we'll take to the streets of Kampala and Nairobi to hear some what people there think about LGBTQ plus rights in Africa. And we'll have the results of our social media poll on the issue. Do stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
What happened right now is the intensity from religious leaders, politicians who always find it upon themselves to clamp on homophobia as a point of getting a lot of attention. Of course, they'll get attention, and trust me, whoever is going to support this bill in parliament will get re-elected, because they know they can count on that vote. But also, they build their momentum from the hate that is rooted deep down within our society.
Biblically and religiously, it's just an uncouth behavior. It's not something that it's even religiously put by God, because even when you go to the Bible, God ordained a marriage from a man and a woman. It was never a woman and a woman, or a man and a man. So, first of all, biblically, I rebuke it and I refuse it, and I say no, no, no to LGBTQ.
I don't think like the government should make laws to allow people to interact with others sexually. I just think sexuality to me is on a personal level. They should allow people to interact with whoever, and if it's the same gender or it's different, that is it.
I also love to say yes, to respect people's opinion and values, but still in our society, it's quite not clear the intention of veto of it all. Therefore, that's why I feel strongly I don't agree that it's something that we should vigorize, not only as a country, but also as a society.
And you are not God. You can't judge. You can't come up and judge someone to get killed or to get isolated, or to spend all his life in prison.
Ugandans and Kenyans. They're telling us whether they think more countries on the African continent should criminalize or legalize LGBTQ plus rights. Also, we conducted a poll asking Straight Talk Africa social media followers whether they think more African countries should protect LGBTQ rights. And as you can see there, 24% of respondents said yes and 76% of respondents said no. And of course, that is not a scientific poll. We just wanted to feel out our followers on social media. So what will African countries still mulling LGBTQ legislation do internationally? Could gay rights become an obstacle in the relationship between Washington and African governments, even as the United States seeks to boost economic and diplomatic ties across the continent? My guests today are Kenneth Mwenda, a very patient Kenneth Mwenda, who's back again. He's a professor of law at South Africa's University of the Western Cape. And also joining us is Ugandan human rights advocate Pepe Onziema. He's the program director of Sexual Minorities Uganda, an advocacy network based in Kampala. Pepe and Professor, a warm welcome to both of you. And Pepe, I want to start with you. How many people in Uganda are likely to be affected by this Anti-Homosexuality Act? I mean, what are LGBTQ persons supposed to do right now? What do you do? Do you flee? Do you hide? Do you leave the country? What do you do in your everyday life now?
Thank you very much, Heidi, for having me. To your question, it sort of puts the burden again on LGBTIQ persons to, you know, protect themselves, find ways of them living as Ugandans. And for your information, there are so many of us who love this country, who contribute to this country. We are taxpayers, we are parents, we are children, and so on. So to your question, how many people would be affected? One is that all Ugandans would be affected. And today I'm inspired so much by a letter that was written by a couple of parents who, wrote a letter, and it was published in the local daily, whereby they were appealing to the government, they were appealing to the legislators, saying they love their children, government is making it impossible for them to be parents that they are. So everyone would be affected, because in the law it talks about, you know, anyone who rents a house to an LGBTIQ person. That means that affects, by the way, the economy, because landlords, there's an act that compels them to pay taxes. That means that the economy is also affected in that way. A landlord will be affected, a teacher will be affected, parents will be affected, everyone will be affected. And this law is really not about homosexuality. It's about using a minority group that is every day just trying to survive as a Ugandan. And it's a scapegoat kind of tactic from us as Wanainchi, as Ugandans, as citizens, to hold our legislators that we actually vote into parliament, to hold them accountable for misinformation, for misappropriation of funds. And this particular law came in and was, you know, sped so fast when there was a discussion around iron sheets that were supposed to be for a less developed part of Uganda, which is Karamoja. And that discourse has sort of disappeared, and everyone is in this hysteria about homosexuality instead of the actual issues that are supposed to be discussed. So it affects everyone, even the legislators themselves. It affects them.
Professor, from a purely legal standpoint, though, does this legislation in its current form appear to be well thought out? I mean, if you can be jailed for, say, merely identifying as being LGBTQ, what stops anyone from accusing someone of being gay, someone who's a business competitor, a political opponent, or just simply someone you don't like? I mean, you know, where's going to be the, what are the elements of proof? Does that play in? And can being accused of being gay or part of the LGBTQ community, can that mere accusation land you in physical and legal danger?
Thanks, Heidi. First and foremost, I think I'd like to think that There's need for more dialogue and conversation between the various stakeholders, the state, the individuals who are affected directly or indirectly, as well as other international cooperating partners. A state does not exist in isolation. Uganda is a sovereign state like any other state where these issues are being discussed. It's not just in Uganda, elsewhere as well. These are sovereign states, but we must be mindful that individuals are also subjects of international law. And states do sign, ratify, and accede to international treaties. For example, the African Charter of Human Rights, and in particular, Article 28 of that charter spells out clearly the issue of discriminating against people, and it uses the words explicitly, tolerance. There's need for tolerance. So these are instruments that African states sign. You know, we've signed treaties, we've signed conventions and acceded to protocols. When we are developing our own municipal law, when I say municipal law, it means the domestic legislation, we must be mindful of our international covenants that we've already committed ourselves to.
And I want to talk about sort of those international relations in a moment. But Pepe, this is not the first time President Museveni has had LGBTQ plus legislation on his desk. What is different this time for him and for the country?
I think what's different this time is that there are so many different players that have come into making this legislation see that day of light. We have U.S. evangelicals who have come into this country and hoodwinked us with, you know, building schools, building hospitals, and while they are indoctrinating Ugandan citizens into this propaganda against LGBTIQ persons. And because this time it's even more widespread across the country and across religions, before we would see that the Muslims were not so much participating in the propaganda, but this time the law was actually tabled by Asman Basalra, who is a practicing Muslim. So, and the president has said that, you know, LGBT people have existed before, but they've not been persecuted, they've not been killed, and all that. He holds that view, but also there's the view of the fact that the country is kind of going through all, you know, the economic crisis. We are barely recovering from COVID and all the atrocities and violations that happened during that time. So I feel like it places him in a place where he will also fall for the scapegoating of LGBTIQ persons. So it's really worrisome, and any time now he could sign the bill. And we are also not really sure of what our chances are in the courts of law, because all these places are speaking the same language. Our lawyers, our judges, basically wherever we could run, they are speaking the same language of homophobia, of lack of intolerance.
Here in the United States, of course, this is a religious, an intense religious debate. It is a political debate, and I mean, it is a divisive issue. People are very polarized on this issue here in the United States as well. But here's what the White House press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, she's here with the White House's reaction to the Anti-Homosexuality Act that just passed in Uganda's parliament. Let's take a listen.
If the AHA is signed into law and enacted, it would impinge upon universal human rights, jeopardize progress in the fight against HIV/AIDS, deter tourism and invest in Uganda, and damage Uganda's international reputation. The bill is one of the most extreme anti-LGBTQI plus laws in the world. Human rights are universal. No one should be attacked, imprisoned, or killed simply because of who they are or whom they love.
Now, of course, just another note, I also reached out to Minister Chris Byron-Munsi. He is the Minister of Information, Communication, Technology and National Guidance in Uganda. He said he would like to come on the show to talk about this new law, but that he's traveling today. He agreed to write me a written comment instead. But as of this moment, we have not received any further communication from him. Minister, I would like to extend an open invitation to you to come on Straight Talk Africa and talk about this legislation at a later stage. stage. Minister, you say when, and we will make it happen. Pepe, I want to come back to you here. Do you think LGBTQ rights could really become a diplomatic sticking point in U.S.-Africa relations, even as this administration tries to really improve relations with the continent?
I definitely think that it is a sticking point in the relations. However, I also feel that in the diplomatic circles, my life really doesn't matter. Uganda is a landlocked country, and it's very central to U.S. interests, to international interests, and most of those interests, yes, part of it is human rights and LGBTIQ rights of LGBTIQ persons across the globe. But in centering diplomatic, basically, what I'm trying to say is that we shouldn't always be placed at the center of like the dangling carrot for diplomatic agreements or discussions. These are real lives that are at stake. Our lives are at stake. And it needs to go beyond, placing us as that token for discussions.
Professor, having grown up for me during apartheid, I remember a time when, as a person of color, it was deemed immoral and not of God for a white South African to fall in love with a black or a brown South African, anyone who wasn't from the white community. Those relationships, of which many people in South Africa are products, those were deemed immoral too, of course. And if you defended the human rights of people of color, you also could be jailed. The government's message was, we will jail you, we will hunt you down, we will make you homeless, we will impoverish you, we will put you in prison, and if we need to, we will execute you. So when it comes to the issue of discrimination, and especially discrimination as we know it on the African continent and where we experience it in other parts of the world, how do people in their minds make the distinction between discrimination based on racial identity and discrimination based on sexual identity?
Good question, Haiti. South Africa's position, the Constitution of 1996, South Africa in particular, I think Section 9, Subsection 3 and Section 4, Subsection 4, provides for, protection against what we call horizontal and vertical discrimination. Horizontal is you and I, you're discriminating against me, I'm discriminating against you. Vertical is the state discriminating against the citizens. So that's in Section 9, Subsection 3 and 4 of the South African Constitution. Now, at some point, if you remember in the late 60s, 66, I think, there was legislation which was passed in South Africa to actually move against gay rights. And that was reversed with the constitution coming into place and a lot of cases that were decided after by the Constitutional Court of South Africa, saying that, the constitution provides for LGBT rights. And the South African constitution is the first constitution in the world to explicitly give protection for sexual orientation rights. So South Africa has done exceedingly well in that. However, there's a caveat there. The norms, the traditions, the cultures of the people, you see a bit of pushback against minorities based on sexual orientation in South Africa, as well as in many other parts of the world. But South Africa is unique in the sense that the law provides for explicit protection. That's a big plus. Now, the challenges that we are facing today, like I pointed out earlier, is that we have so many other things to factor in as a government if one is to look at it from that perspective. It's not just a question of the government wants this, but what other instruments has the government committed itself to at the international level? Okay, you cannot say one thing at the international level and then do another thing at home. You should be consistent.
Well, I wish we had more time to discuss this, but we will discuss this topic again. Professor, thank you so much for coming in and
welcome.
Talking to us. And of course, Pepe, I wanted to talk to you about so many more other things, but I will invite you back. Thank you so much for your time. And that is our show this week. Of course, thank you to my guests and to my reporting colleagues in Washington, Kampala, and Nairobi. And thanks to you, our audience, for always joining us on television, radio, and online. Do follow us on social media.